Welcome to the Full Frontal Living Podcast. I'm Lisa Carpenter, master life coach to driven, ambitious humans who want more out of life without having to sacrifice themselves to achieve it. I'll share how it's possible to slow down, take better care of yourself, find more peace and ease, create sustainable energy, stop procrastination and overwhelm, and fall in love with your life, your business, and your body. This podcast is for you if you're ready to learn what it takes to thrive as a high performer, do less but achieve more, make you and your well-being a top priority, and create your extraordinary life. I'm so glad you're here. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Full Frontal Living Podcast. I brought my friend Jen Pike back on. She was back on the podcast, I don't know, a couple months ago, I think now. Time is flying. We talked about hormones and health and all the things. And I wanted to have you back on because I couldn't think of a better person to have a conversation about how, as driven, ambitious, go-getting women, how we learn to slow down. Because there's a lot of these messages around slowing down, taking it easier, taking your foot off the gas. But the actual how to do that, so many women really struggle with because they've got, you know, this is how they've been running their lives. So before we dive into this conversation, and it's going to go wherever it's going to go, because that's what we do. Yeah. Can you introduce yourself to everybody? Because if they are a new listener, I want them to know you like I know you.
All right. Well, the short and the long of it is I'm a mom. I'm a mom of two, and I'm a functional medicine diagnostic practitioner and nutritionist, and I specialize in women's health and hormones. My background is as a medical exercise specialist. So I started off in the gym. It's where I lived, breathed, did all the things, all that. I owned my own brick and mortar space for a long period of time. It was great until it wasn't. I've gone through many iterations of building business, supporting women, and you know, along the journey, having a lot of understanding, a lot of knowledge, but not always applying that to myself when it came to my own personal growth and you know, that the legacy that we're trying to create for ourselves. And I burned myself out pretty dang hard a couple of times in the process. And I have, you know, built a really successful company and, you know, kept my family and my sanity intact over the years, but it was not by default. It was very much by design, and the design came through having these moments of what am I actually doing, and at what cost am I doing all of these things to my body, to my life. And, you know, it took me only a couple of times to really feel like I had hit rock bottom in order to really draw the line in the sand and make the decision that I was no longer willing to trade myself for the goals that I had and the impact I wanted to create in the world. And really then got to work on figuring out a way where I could actually live a life and design a business that didn't feel like it was exhausting me all the time. And that's how I've gotten to where I am now.
So let's go back in time, because I had the privilege of seeing you on stage at the Monetize Your Mind conference, where you really shared your story of burnout. So do you want to walk people through what that actually looked like for you, a little bit more about that actual story?
Yeah. So I registered my first company when I was 17. So I was already in business for myself while I was also going through school and, you know, getting all my designations. And I was like the Energizer Bunny. I was like, you know, get one job, I'll get three. You know, take one program, I'll take two. And I loved it. And I had the stamina for it back then. And it was great. And then I became a mom. I had our first child when I was 26. And I had been training women up until that point who were mothers and were coming in feeling exhausted and depleted. And I was listening to them and I could hear them, but I did not feel them and get them until I had my own child. And I was like, whoa, this is different. And my ability just really changed. And I felt that, but I didn't honor it. So I continued to push, even now being, you know, a mom. And then I had my second child and continued to push. But at that point, you know, when my son came around, my body was really starting to communicate louder. And I wasn't performing the same way. I wasn't recovering the same way. And so my idea of creating simplicity was, instead of traveling around to all of these different gyms and training multiple people in multiple locations, I was going to create my own location, have one spot, literally write a letter to the universe and be like, hey, you, this is where I live. Please send all the abundance and all of the energy and all the work to this like one address. Here's the zip code. Let's go. And so I did that, and it was the hardest and most beautiful and wonderful thing that I ever did. All those things all at once. So I created the brick and mortar, and I gave that business everything I had. I gave it more than I gave anything or anyone else in my life at that time, including my husband and my children and my own body. And I built this company over the span of 5 years, went on to sell it, and then transitioned everything online. But in that period of time, I did everything and anything you could imagine to get clients in the door, to keep clients in the door, to keep people happy, to be innovative, to be the woman that was supporting the women, to build the circle, create the community, to, you know, not only go into the rooms where things were happening, but if I didn't see the room that existed, I was going to create the room. And I did all of that. And in the moments when I would be in these environments with other women and doing the thing, I was like on fire. I loved it. I was so happy. But then as soon as I would step out of that, the end of the day, into the car, transitioning to go home and be a mom and a wife and just a regular human, not serving people, I was so exhausted. And so on the surface, it looked like I was nailing it. It looked like everything was going incredible. But behind the scenes, we were really struggling. We were struggling financially because I owned a yoga and Pilates studio. You don't have to be a mathematician to understand that you can't just simply multiply mats on the floor and heads in the building with what you charge and think that you're going to create abundance. So the overhead of running a physical space with staff, you know, and all of the other things, like it just at the end of the month, we were beyond at the end of the money. And so very quickly, you know, a few years in, we were into debt. And there was no more of me that I could do anything with. I was already teaching 20 classes a week. I was already literally like, do you need my left arm and my right arm to clients? I was trying to offer other programs on top of it. And I just got to this point where I had my like final breakdown to the breakthrough, where I was literally became incapacitated for a few days on the couch. And, you know, my small kids are trying to take care of me. My husband, who I've been with since we were in high school, was like, I don't even know who you are anymore. Not saying it in a mean way, but like in a really concerned way, like literally on his knees in front of the couch on me where I had moved into for a few days, and was just like, I don't know how to help you. And him saying that to me was like so massive, because it was in this moment where I was like, oh fuck, like you don't know how to help me, because I literally don't ask for help. Like I haven't taught anyone how to help me. I've like shown everyone I've got it all. I can do it all. And when I started to look around me and I was looking for other women to model for me that it didn't have to be this way, I just didn't see them. I saw lots of women in business, but I saw them feeling the exact same way as me. I saw all the big mentors that were all the men. And I was like, I can't keep up with your friggin' hustle and grind energy. Like my body's not built like you. My nervous system isn't. I have a cycle to honor every month. I have kids. Like it is not the same for me that it is for these men that I was, you know, desiring to have these systems and this structure and then the outcome of that. And so I really had to make a decision in that moment of, okay, either I'm just going to get myself back into this pattern where I know I'll be fine in a little bit, and I'll scoop myself back up and I'll live the fine life for a period of time. And then I know I'll be back here on this couch, and then I'll just pick myself up again. And I was like, I knew I could do that. I could do the interval training of business and life. I could have a high and a low and a high and a low. Totally, I could do that. But I didn't want to, because I was like, in that moment for me, Lisa, I knew, and because this is the work I was doing with women, like literally sitting across the table from them every day, and these women coming in thinking like, I just need a plan. I need you to tell me what to eat. I need some supplements. And then like, you know, 12 minutes into us chatting, them falling apart in front of me and then realizing like, holy shit, I don't need a meal plan. Like I got to change like life as a whole. I knew in that moment, if I chose to just pick myself up, choose another hard thing, I was an inch away from an autoimmune illness. I knew it. Like everything in my body was like, you do this, you're going to end up with something like Hashimoto's. You do this, you're going to end up with like fill in the blanks. And so there's this really difficult thing that happens. And probably some of your listeners can relate to this, where you know it, like on a cerebral level, you know it. There's probably people listening right now that's like, holy shit, like I'm in it right now. So you go to this place of like, you recognize it, and then you take a step back and you start to go, okay, where do I begin? And then you go look at your calendar and you're like, well, not there. And then you go look at some of your lifestyle choices and you're like, oh, that's also looking fairly hard. And then you go look at your relationships and you're like, yep, definitely not starting. And you just start to look at every area and everything feels so difficult. And then you make like one tiny change and then you're like, I'm good. Like, look at me. And then all of a sudden you find yourself right back to where you started and how you felt. And what I noticed the first time this happened to me when I started to make the changes is that when I would end up kind of falling back into this habit, this new emotion came with me, which was shame. And I was just like, oh, what is this thing? Where I would get into this shame circle of everyone around me saying like, you've got so much potential and you're like living to an inch of it. And you've got so much more you can create and do out there. And you know, don't give up on yourself. And I'd be like, yeah, like, okay, I've got this. And then when I couldn't do those things, I would feel shame. I would feel shame that I didn't have the energy to be with my kids or be as present as I wanted to. I would have shame that I was too tired at night to connect with my husband, but I would go and spend the time with the women at the studio. Like, I just started to notice all of these other patterns showing up. And that for me was like, I don't care what the first step is, but something has to be different because I can't keep going on like this.
I'm curious. There's so many things you said in here that resonate with me. I don't know if you know that I had a bricks and mortar studio once upon a time.
No, I did not know that.
Taught nutrition and fitness because I was a trainer. I had my own studio. So it was,
I don't know that.
Work all the time, money come in, money go back out, like all the things, right? Like how can I hustle harder? And I mean, I remember when I had, God, which one of my kids, see, this is the thing. When I look back on when my kids were young, I don't even really remember that much of it because I was so busy. I was so searching for my success, doing all the things, right? Ironically, to make a better life for my kids, but I wasn't present with my kids. And that's a whole other story because I really struggled around just being a mom in general. Mm-hmm. Business felt way easier than like managing these two little things that came with no manual that felt very, very out of control. So it was way easier to put myself back in what was familiar. And I think that this is why a lot of women get caught up in their drive and ambition, because that feels so much safer and so much more comfortable than being even present as being a mom. And then you throw in that word potential, because when I look at being a mom, I'm like, what's the potential of being a mom? I didn't see any value in that. And I'm not throwing moms under the bus because obviously I see this very differently now, but I saw the value in what I was doing out here, not in what I was doing in my home. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to a speaking engagement. I'll never forget this because I remember driving back thinking, my God, if I get into an accident, this is going to be one for the books, for the firemen, because I was literally hooked up to my breast pump in the cigarette lighter in my standard transmission car, driving from my speaking engagement back to the studio to see clients because I needed to have breast milk. This was for Jake. Yeah, this was for Jake. This wasn't for my other two. Like that, and that seemed normal because this is what we do. This is what we have to do. We're building businesses. Yep. We got stuff that we're trying to conquer. And I did really have that sense of pride and look at me doing everything. And like you, when you were talking about your husband being in front of you and you recognizing that you didn't teach anybody how to help you, I took a lot of pride in that I didn't need any help. Mm-hmm. Right? I was just going to do it. I was going to do it myself. Like there was a lot of value in that. And I think so many women And I would love to hear where you believe that came from in you, this part of you that felt like you had to do it all and be it all for everybody.
You know, I've done a lot of work around this, and I was never actually taught or told that. I like assumed a role for myself. And I think it came from when I was younger, like always from a very young age. Like I can even remember back in like kindergarten, I remember like Mrs. Johnson, my junior kindergarten teacher, when it was parent teacher like night and they would come in, I can remember her saying, you know, like she's one of the students we don't even like worry about, like she's got it, like we put the thing on the board or we say it once and like Jennifer goes and does it, like she's a natural leader, she doesn't need a lot of motivation, she just goes and does it. And then that was like always the thing in school, the two continuums for me was she's a natural leader, can do her own thing, and she talks a lot. Like so it was like, you know, if only she could focus and not be distracted and chatty over here, but she's a natural leader. And then every job I had, that was the accolade that came to me, natural leader. And I was always put in a leadership role. You know, I worked at McDonald's as a teen, like within a couple of months, I was like a crew trainer. And then I was running all the kids' birthday parties. And then I was in a management role. You know, when I worked in retail, when I worked in a restaurant, when I worked on a golf, I was always put into these management positions. And so it was like, this is just how I'm recognized. And if I'm not a leader, then like who else am I? Because I'm not recognized as like just a team player. I'm somebody who has to motivate the team to like get the things going. And, you know, group projects in school. Oh my gosh. Like I was just like, I got this, like, you know, just do the bubble letters on the Bristol board. Like I'll do the rest of it. And that was just, you know, it was just for me. And then you do really teach people in your life how to expect that of you. So my parents always just, I never had a ton of pressure from my parents, but it was always like, we're so proud of you. You're this, you're that. And so it was like, love just came through praise. That's how it was. And then, yeah. So that for me, I think was just it. I didn't grow up with pressure ever. The messaging from my mom and dad was always like, just whatever you choose, be happy. Like make it fulfill you. That was always it. But for me, it was like fulfillment was leading, building, achieving, doing better. And because when I was younger, like I had a huge engine for capacity. So I never worked a job. I always worked more than one job. So when I was like, you know, I wanted a huge family. Like when I was growing up, I wanted like six kids. Then my sister had a couple and I was like, maybe four. And then I had one and I was like, maybe one. I was like, this is a way more work than I thought. And then I had a second and it was for me, you know, we had talked about a third, but I knew I was like, I'm not a stay-at-home mom. Like that is not going to be the best version of me. And so I chose that business to be like my third baby. Like that was my creation project I was moving into. But you know what? Like things change, life changes, and I started to change. And the things that used to make me feel good and make me feel proud all of a sudden became things that sucked the life out of me. And I was like, I just got to this point where I'm like, this is not my role anymore. Like this is now for someone else. I could feel I was transitioning into this just wiser, more grounded, more feminine place in my life. But it was really hard because I could feel it. Like I could describe it so well. But when I was looking in my own life and a lot of the things I had to change, it was really scary because everything I created was attached to either monetary, like I made money and generated, you know, the money for the family. I'm the one who made the majority of the money because I had that energy where I was like, I got it, I'll go. And when you start to think about how do you unwind the machine and how do you go in and like rebuild something that feels better for your body, it's really scary because probably for a period of time, there's going to be a little bit less than what you're used to. Because when you're restructuring and building something, it's same thing like, you know, you've worked with women in their fitness health forever. When you have somebody who has just been progressively working and building for a long time, you're going to get to a point where a deload is going to be needed. Like you're going to have to it's going to be way less volume. You're going to take time off of things that you have been doing for so long that now just start to feel like your norm. And that will feel 10 times more uncomfortable than the hardest workout you could ever give that woman, is to actually tell her to do less and go for a walk.
This is, it's making me laugh because I remember the first coach I had who was like, you need to take a week off. And I'm like, you're crazy. Like, yeah, why would I do that? And it was so, taking a week off was so hard. And now I'm one of the few people on my coach's team that regularly takes a week off.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas most women don't, they'll do a deload, but they'll just lighten things up in the gym. Whereas I'm happy to be off. And even with having 6 weeks off coming up, I have no stress around that. Like I'll miss being in the gym, but I'm also fine not going to the gym. And this kind of comes back to your point around your entire identity was built around being a leader.
Yep.
My entire identity was built on the things that I could accomplish. And, you know, we all have our thing that become our identity, and we will always do our identity, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Our circumstances will always reflect our identity. So when we're talking about changing and letting go of things and how can we start to slow down, it has to first start at looking at the identities that we're clinging to, because those identities will fight for the long to-do list. They'll fight for all the exercise. They'll fight for all the whatever your things are. So when you started to release this identity of a leader, and you still are a leader, you're just, you and I both have really redefined feminine leadership. Through my perspective, right? This is a big thing that I talk about, is how do we define performance and leadership for women and break free of that masculine kind of paradigm of do, do, do. So how did this start for you? How did you start to release this when you've grown up on leading everything?
So it came back to that initial burnout phase at my studio. I started to delegate out of necessity. So I was like, okay, leadership. I'm going to start to like lead others, not just lead myself. And so I really rejigged everything and how we were running the studio. And I actually, I cleaned house with the team that I had at the time that was working like the front end. And I hired internally all members who like literally bought into the vision and believed in everything we were doing, because they were there all the time. And they ended up like, I am still connected with all of those women who worked for me, you know, all those years ago at reception and in the studio and all of that. So that was really big, because there's a difference when someone is showing up simply for a paycheck versus when someone is like, what you are doing has changed my life. I want to be part of this. How I feel when I'm here is like, I don't feel like that anywhere else. And they just want to be part of something. And that changed everything for me. So that was step number one, was delegating and recognizing that the most incredible collaborators and people I had were literally right in front of me. I wasn't going to find them by posting, we're hiring now. I had to just start to open the conversation and actually go and ask people, like, I love the energy when you're in here. I feel like you know exactly what we're doing. You know, do you want to come in and be in the space? And so that was number one. The second thing was actually allowing myself, when I started to create more room and be in the studio a little bit less, to not then replace it with more work somewhere else. So it was like, I really had to work on what it meant to be present with my kids. Like, it was really hard for me, because how a lot of people would say that if they take a day off, they felt like they were being lazy. When I was with the kids, and you know, when you have young kids, like, it can feel like Groundhog Day. So we'd be like doing the things and all of that. And I'd be like, oh my God, there's so much I have to get done. And, you know, like, craft time is, wow, when are we stopping this so I can get back to, and, you know, and so I had to move through a lot of that. And part of that also was I had to rehabilitate my adrenals and my nervous system from teaching. I was teaching 20 classes a week on top of then going and doing my own workouts, because I didn't count those as my own workouts. And so I had to like literally cut that in half in the beginning, which needed to be more, but at that time felt very radical to me. And then it was having conversations with my husband, who, you know, he's so fantastic and so great, but it was me being like honest of, I know it might look like this, but this is actually how I'm feeling. And this is what I need support wise. And also it wasn't even, he's always been super hands-on. It was more so, I was like, I need you to be my accountability partner. And when you start to see me doing this thing, I need you to catch me on it. Like, I need you to call me out, because it was way easier for me to just go and busy things up. And what started to happen is when I was beginning to try to unwind some things, it'd feel really uncomfortable. And then I would go and launch something new, because I'd be like, I'm just going to go make myself busy. I'll distract myself. So I would be like, I'm not going to do this thing over here anymore. And then 72 hours later, I'd be like, new program happening. So I would tell myself I was stopping doing this, but I would just put something else in there.
It takes a lot of work. And this is what many people don't understand, is our nervous system gets wired to all the doing. Mm-hmm. So we say we want to slow down and do less, but then in the slowing down, it feels wildly uncomfortable, because mm-hmm. now that creates an unsafe space for our nervous system. Yep. So our nervous system is like, what's happening here? And that's why calm can often feel chaotic for people. And it's the willingness to slowly work through that and recognize it's okay for me to be uncomfortable in the not doing, and to stay with that as opposed to going and filling your time again. And mm-hmm. I think that that is a big thing for the women who are listening to this to recognize, is slowing down sounds like, you know, fields of flowers and, you know, clouds floating overhead, peaceful and beautiful. And it's actually so far from that. It was wildly uncomfortable for me to start to slow down, to be in that discomfort of like, there's nothing I actually need to do. And even this weekend, I was saying to Macy, I'm so grateful to be at a place where my weekends now, I can go the whole weekend and not think about work at all mm-hmm. and not feel that like pull to just go do that one thing. And that used to be my life. Like constantly there was some, you know, like you, project thing, something I needed to write, something I needed to post on social media. And I don't get that pull anymore.
Yeah. One thing I started to realize is that I will get done what needs to get done in the amount of time I have.
Correct.
So whether I have it, you know, something that I'm like, it's going to start 7 days out, or I start at 7 hours out, it will end up being actually the exact same. And for me, I just know for myself, if I wait till 7 hours, it'll probably be better than if I had started 7 days before. So people, like, we can call it a procrastinator or whatever, or it's like, we just have our way of doing our thing. And yes, that it all does come back to our nervous system. And, you know, it's wild when you come to this place that is so uncomfortable. And that is exactly, like, for me, what happens when I choose to do less in an area so I can focus on doing better. So I start to go deep instead of wide. Width is my go-to. It's, I've always been able, like I said, to juggle a lot of things. I don't want to do that anymore. So I battle with like what I want versus what my body is like, but we don't do that. This is what we do. So taking it from the width to the depth is exactly what comes up for me, is it doesn't feel safe. There feels very uncertain. And so then my brain can start to go into these places of, well, that'll create lack. There won't be enough, and and all of this and that. And that is an ongoing, like, you have to meet yourself with it. You've got to, like, so for me, you know, this is some of the work of Byron Katie, but also like, I look for evidence. Like, is that actually true? Do I have evidence to show that when I have done less better, that it has meant, you know, less abundance, less whatever it may be? And it's actually the opposite that is true. When I've been more dialed in and I've been more focused and I've really done the work that I want to, it has always ended up better. Yeah. But I think sometimes it's like, again, in the gym, we just have to do a few more reps. Like, you don't build muscle overnight. At least I don't, right? Like, it takes years for you to actually feel like you see what you desire to see. And same thing when you're trying to do anything new, your body and your nervous system, this is not a 90-day program. You know, like, this is arguably probably going to be something you're working on for the rest of your life.
Yeah. It's still something I bump up against.
Yeah.
You know, it's still, I have to really check myself. I don't get the same pulls anymore. So I don't get into you know, if things are going on in my life, I don't get into overworking anymore because that actually physically doesn't feel good in my body. Like my body's like, no, we don't do this anymore.
Yeah.
But I do sometimes have to override that part of me that wants to go do extra things. Mm-hmm. Like even this morning meeting with my team, we've got so much on the plate right now. And I've got this other idea over here lingering. And I said to her, I don't get to look at this until these things are finished.
Yeah.
I said, we're just going to put it on the Trello board. We're going to leave it there, but I don't get to look at it until these things are done because I have so much evidence of same as you. When I focus and do those things that are most important to me, they actually yield better results.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you know, unhinging from that doing, doing, doing will get you more. That's like running around the gym, doing one set of every exercise, thinking you're going to get results. Like
100%.
It doesn't work that way. So for the women who are listening, and they've gone to their calendar. No, can't change that. Gone to their family. No, can't change anything there. Okay, I want to eat healthier. Oh God, that's overwhelming too. How do people start? What would be your best tips for somebody who is doing all the things and they're really wanting to create more ease in their lives? Where do they start? They feel themselves teetering on that burnout if they haven't already been there before. Because I think you and I both know you got to run that cycle a couple times before shit really gets real and you're like, can't do this again.
It's no longer an option.
Yeah.
So I'll answer this through the lens of not just personally, but literally like hundreds and hundreds of women that I have probably definitely in the thousands at this point that I have like counseled and coached through this is I have found it easier to help women create a small little habit stack in what they're already doing in their day to help them feel a little bit better than it is to go in and tell them, I need you to wipe the slate clean and like create a new approach. So for instance, you know, if her energy bottoms out in the afternoon, we may do things like add some electrolytes into her water. It could be a simple thing, like if she's sitting at a desk all day, can we actually get you to use some books and create a sit stand option or an electric desk where we can get you standing and kind of just like break up that fuzz? And then doing a scrub. So I work with a lot of women I work with in like kind of cyclical patterns. But it's like looking like right now you and I are recording this around the full moon. So this period of time from the full moon up until when we have the next new moon, this is the perfect time to do a scrub. And a scrub is looking at your calendar and really assessing, do I need to be doing that thing? Is that important? Why do I need to have that meeting? Is that a weekly meeting? Should that be a bi-weekly or a once a month meeting? You know, what am I doing repetitively again and again that I could maybe change my approach to how I do it so I can batch it and do it once? So instead of being like Tuesday, I create content every Tuesday. Why can't you just go to like a little cafe or make yourself a little mug of yum, bang out some content 3 hours on one Tuesday, and now you've freed up 3 hours every other Tuesday so that you actually have more space. So I find like doing an energy and time audit of your calendar. And it can be helpful to do this with someone else. It doesn't even necessarily have to be a coach, but literally just someone else in your life who can also look at it and be like, okay, is this important? Is this important? You know, this could be a team member, anybody like that. But I find that we can go and actually discover a few extra hours, at least in a week, that you've been doing out of habit and autopilot that we could actually create more simplicity and ease. So that I find is actually an exciting exercise for people to do, because when you can literally show someone their calendar right now, like the Google calendar and all color coded and all of that, and all of a sudden you go in and start to create white space is like, oh, like I didn't even know that time was there. Taking a 5-day work week and moving it into a 4-day work week. You know, there used to be strategies like in the beginning for me, what I did is so when I was running the studio and the kids were little, I didn't work Wednesdays. So the kids were in daycare on Mondays and Tuesdays. Wednesdays, I would like reground and then Thursday, Friday, and then have the weekends off. As the kids got older and went into school, I started to recognize like just how many long weekends that we had. And so I started to take off Tuesdays because that guaranteed me almost once a month having Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday off, Tuesday off, 5 days off with myself and with my kids. So Tuesday became that day off. And the tricky part for this for some people is that on that holiday Monday where you're not going to be booking clients because people need to go there, enjoy their holiday, and so do you. Don't get in the habit of then booking up that free Tuesday that you created. You just don't have space again until Wednesday. And so that was it. Now I'm at the point where I work, a 3 to maybe 4 day work week, but my days have themes. So it's like, I only do podcast interviews for my show on Tuesdays, right? Like my clinical days with clients and different things like that are Wednesday, Thursdays. Fridays, I'm only ever going to work a Friday if I'm like hosting a retreat or running a workshop. And so giving themes to your days can help your energy because you're not like podcast here, meeting here, protocol there. Like you're wearing, 3 or 4 different hats all in one day. And again, this can feel overwhelming in the beginning, but you have to just simply start to pay attention. Where can you batch your energy better? And then the other thing I would say is, making the conscious choice to stop working late in the evening. Like when my kids were little, I would literally work on the computer until my eyes were burning and I couldn't friggin' see anymore. And it would be the next day. It'd be like after midnight, 1 o'clock. So that was huge in the beginning. It was okay, get yourself to bed by 11, then 10:45, 10:30. And now for me, but when the clock strikes 9, I'm like, oh my God, I need to get myself upstairs. I got it. And if I'm not lights out by 10, I feel that now. So now it's no longer something I have to discipline myself to do. I've been doing it as a habit so long, my body will literally raise its hand and be like, I do not appreciate this. You got to get to bed earlier tonight. So those would be some of the things that I would say in the beginning. Would be some of the lifestyle things. And then when it comes in your actual business and in your work, you really have to look at, is everything you're doing necessary? Like, are you actually generating not just revenue, but profit off of the things that you are running? Do you actually need to have the size team that you have? It's like we also live in this time right now where everything is about delegate, hire, build your team, scale it, all of that. Some people are ready for that. Some people are not. So some people are spending so much more money to pay other people to do the thing that they really need to take ownership of. And they really need to focus on, understand that foundation. And then you can start to maybe subcontract out, hire for a simple project. So part of that scrub is like the calendar scrub is great. But then this is also looking at like a financial audit of what you're spending and what is important. And then what are you actually generating and bringing in? I do this every month, every single month. I look at the drawing board again and I go, is what we're doing working? Look at the analytics and the information, the data of that. Does this still feel good? And what'll happen for those of you listening, ladies, is, things can actually go really smoothly. Fun, smooth, and exciting to get to your first 6 figures. Oh. And then even to your first couple $100,000. And then you start to hit towards this $500,000 and $750,000 and then $1 million mark. And then things are going to break. Like the wheels are going to freaking fall off because how you built and generated all of that in the beginning was probably mostly off of your own back. Oh. And then you're going to get to a point where you can't sustain that anymore. So now how do you do this thing called scale and grow when you really built it not off systems and structure, but off of a lot of joy and excitement and fire and passion? And those things now need a rest, but you still want to be bringing in the same clientele, generating the same contracts, money, and all of that. So part of this is also understanding when you're in business as an entrepreneur, there's nothing linear or simplistic about it. But this is like, we're cut from this cloth as yeah. entrepreneurs. And so instead of, beating that horse that just has got nothing left in it, it is like, you've got to reevaluate. You've got to recognize what's working. You have to give yourself permission to quit. And we are in a time where quitting is perceived to be as a weakness and giving up. I look at it as the total opposite. I'm not saying to throw your hands in the air and walk away and just quit. I mean, when you actually look in front of you as to what's working and what's not, literally, energetically, or otherwise, give yourself permission to just say, I'm so grateful for this program, this thing, for this period of time. I am not the same woman I was when I once created and delivered this. I'm going to bless and release it so that I can now focus over here. That's very different than the person that's just like, this is too hard, I'm giving up. That's not the kind of quitting I'm talking about. I'm like, you actually have evidence around you. Like, it's time to say goodbye.
It's so true. I've quit a lot of things in my business.
Me too. And I'm so damn glad I did.
So glad. And I do an audit all the time. In fact, I even wrote an entire program around editing your energy, right? All these different areas where you can reclaim your time and your energy back. And I would even go so far as to say, you know, not scaling isn't for everybody.
No.
And I think that this is something that women get to look at, especially if they're entrepreneurs. Like, you can bring your revenue up to a point where you can have a really comfortable life and you don't actually need to ever scale. So you have to look at, is that something that I want for myself, or is that something that I'm chasing because that's what I'm supposed to do as someone in business? Because we don't actually have to do that.
And that's, it's so important to understand this. And this is really like, this is what I've gone through in the last year is we, you know, in the last couple of years, like, we have grown really strong and really successful, and it's incredible. And I'm so grateful for it. However, we live a wonderful life now, and we have our needs are met, our necessity needs, what I call like the rebellious wealth needs of like knowing we have this cushion, we have the ability to, you know, go do those things, which, listen, to everyone listening, like, we were in debt for a long period of time when our kids were little, when I owned that brick and mortar business. Like, thank goodness I decided to quit that, because I would not be here if I had kept trudging along to do that thing. However, I got to this point where we were hitting over seven figures, and I just kept going, okay, this is awesome, this is fun. And then things started to break, and you're looking at stuff and reevaluating. And then I was like, okay, so tell me again, why do I have to keep hitting this number every month? Like, our needs are all being met. We are happy. We are taking care. Why? Cause I did this month, last month, do I have to go double that? Like, why is that the leadership that I am being told? Oh, you did a million, 2 million this year, so next year you're going to double that, because you're going to have the systems and da, 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 da. And it's like, it all sounds great in theory. It totally does. But what people don't tell you about is that going, you know, doubling what it is that you've generated in revenue. And this could even be for some of you listening, going from $10,000 to $20,000, which is friggin' life-changing. I used to pray. I'm not kidding. I used to pray every day driving my kids to daycare. I would be like, to every God that was listening. Okay. I was a million different religions in that car, just praying to whoever would listen to me, spirit guide, like anybody. If I could bring home $2,000 a month to my family, that would change my life. That's all I was praying for, because everything I was making at that time was just enough to pay for daycare, which also I had so much shame around, because I was working so hard to only make enough for someone else to spend the day with my children. That felt horrible. And then when I started to make the 2000 and then 5,000, then I'll never forget when I started to make 10,000, and my husband and I was like, Chris, we have won the fucking lottery. Like, I was like, this is, oh my God, I cannot even believe we're making this kind of money. And that was the excitement and the holy crap, I can do this, that like kept me going and going. But then you hit this certain point where, you know, yes, you can do a lot of good in the world with that money. And that, but when someone says to you, now you can double that, this is not just as simple as tightening up your systems. There are so many things that have to happen. People don't talk about the marketing and advertising expense to that. So when you hear all these people that are talking about these big ass numbers, I would love to know and understand, what did you invest in your business to generate that? And how much are you taking as profit? And how much is being, you know, invested here? All of these different things. So hitting the million was wonderful and beautiful. I'm so grateful. I have gone literally back to like school as a human being in the last 2 years of this happening, to recognize what actually matters, how we can leverage what it is that we've created, and doing it in a way where I don't find myself back on the couch.
Exactly. Amen to all of this.
Yeah.
Oh, another like soul-filling conversation. So much depth in here for people to take from. Jen, where can everybody find you?
Well, first, I just want to say thanks for having me back on.
I love chatting with you. I'm like, it's just an excuse to get you to myself for an hour.
Because we live too far in the same province.
I know.
We live too far away in the same province.
I'll get up there this summer.
Yeah. So the best place to connect with me is on Instagram. My name is spelled Jen with two N's, Jen Pike. And then I have a podcast, The Simplicity Sessions, and that's health, hormones, this, that, like all the things to create more simplicity and ease.
Because you had two podcasts and you quit one to merge them.
I did.
I was cheering for you when you did that you just decided I'm bringing it all to one because that's like double the amount of work.
Exactly. I'm not afraid to try the thing. I'm not afraid to go a little wider, but then I also know when it's like, it's not worth continuing to do the thing, just realign the energy and bring it back together.
Well, yeah. I adore you. This was a great conversation. You are always so filled with wealth. I know it's going to be so helpful for my listeners. So thank you for coming back on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. And I will catch you on the next episode.